In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all levels of professional baseball to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, The Tool Shed podcast has you covered with rankings, player analysis, and in-depth discussion. And now, here's your host, Eric Cross.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed podcast brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 390. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Eric Cross. You can find me on Twitter at EricCrossMLB, and the show is at Toolshed Pod. And you can find all of my work exclusively over on Rotoballer or on my Patreon, ToolshedFantasy.com. And in episode 390 today, I have a phenomenal guest on here. I'm pretty sure he is number one in the guest appearance rankings for the Toolshed over the last 4.5 years. You can find him over on Fantasy Pros doing a ton of great stuff, and he's the co-owner of In This League Pod and the creator of Prospect One, Mr. Chris Welsh at Is It The Welsh on the Twitter /X, whatever you call it these days. Welsh, how's it going, bud?
It's officially about to say this is a Chris Cross podcast, but it was also a Chris Cross podcast before too with Clegg. I forget about that. I'm honored to be like the first guest of the new iteration of Toolshed, my friend. So I'm very glad to be here.
Of course, you were the first one. I thought to reach out and shoot you that text a couple weeks ago. Kind of forgot it was Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers listening to this. I know it's be a day after when you are listening to it, but hope all the mothers out there had a great Mother's Day. I'll be doing some stuff with my mother later tonight, which should be going to dinner. I know you're doing stuff with your mother and your wife over there in Arizona. So happy Mother's Day out there to all the mothers. We got a really fun episode today. Talk some recent promotions here. You know, go out to Arizona, talk some Diamondbacks and some prospects that Welsh has already seen out there at the complex level. Some fun names. But before we get into all of that, the usual housekeeping. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Those ratings and reviews do mean a lot. Again, you can find me at Eric Cross MLB, the show at Toolshed Pod. Welsh is at Is It The Welsh. Make sure you check out all the great content over on Rotoballer and win more with Rotoballer's MLB Premium Pass. Gain access to expert tools and advice from proven winners. Import your leagues with TeamSync and get expert advice customized for your league-specific settings. Win more with Rotoballer's lineup assistant tools, free agent finder, prop picks, and the number one DFS lineup optimizer. Our premium pass comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Go to rotoballer.com/radio and use the discount code TOOLSHED at checkout. All right, let's start with Cade Horton, who made his Major League debut on Saturday. Gave up 3 earned runs in 4 innings with 5 strikeouts. So Not a bad debut, pretty decent enough debut for Mr. Cade Horton. Did come in after the opener, so didn't technically get the start. But, you know, 5 strikeouts and 4 innings, nothing to scoff at here. What are your thoughts on Horton, you know, moving forward, Chris? Because he's, you know, he had a pretty good year so far this year in AAA Iowa. Was very good through his 6 starts there. But the one thing I've been kind of concerned about is the fact he's very 4-seam sweeper heavy. You know, and, you know, Justin Steele has made it work for the most part, but he hasn't been really incorporating that curveball or changeup much. Is that something you're concerned about moving forward? And what are your general thoughts on Horton?
Yeah, it's pretty big on Cade Horton for this year, also because there were just a lot of like velo changes. It looked like adjustment changes on being healthy this season. And in AAA, we were seeing some pretty dang good results. One thing I wanted to look at, because I just don't, yeah, I guess it was. Well, no, let me look at this. No. Okay. So where I was going with this was you said the fastball sweeper, I kind of agree with you, especially if you're throwing like a bigger loopier sweeper. So like, you know, in this start that he had, you know, the pluses coming in was the velo year over year you know, had gone up. Triple A in 2024, he was throwing his fastball on average around 94 miles per hour. He was up to 95.8 this past year. So there's a good uptick. It also looks like the parameters of the sweeper change because he went from throwing it harder to just more loopier. And then the curveball change kind of came down probably because he made it more a little bit more of a sweeper and he stopped using his changeup more. So in the minors, all that to be said, he was like, you know, pretty dominantly fastball and sweeper heavy, but velo upticks and he had really good success. He was using his other secondaries a bit more. So this start that he had, he almost didn't even use a changeup in the curve. It was almost not. I think he threw like six or five total of those pitches, which ended up being around like 5%. In the minors so far, he'd been throwing it around 10% so far this year, which is decent. I mean, I would love for personally, I'd kind of like the changeup to uptick a little bit more. So that's going to be something to monitor with him. But I thought he was relatively successful. I like how they used him where they had the opener. They had Keller in front of him, and you know he was able to get the win. The fastball was in the zone. It wasn't there to be a strikeout pitch, but he got 10 called strikes. So a below average CSW percentage, but still solid. Everything was on the sweeper. He was getting the whiffs on the sweeper. And then he threw, six total curveballs and changeups, which were fine. They got whiffs as well. So, you know, can he live like this? I don't know. In this organization, maybe because you mentioned like Steele has done it. I'd love to see the uptick go. But I'm just encouraged that, you know, he's throwing his fastball for strikes. The velo is up a little bit more dominant. And that sweeper looks pretty dang solid. So I think this is like a positive moving forward run for redraft leagues where I think you can hold on. I got a lot of like tough questions. People are like, this guy or Horton. And it was like, well, you know, Horton's got a legit opportunity with that open ish spot with Steele being out in the rotation to stay the whole year. And they kind of maybe slowly babied it just a tiny bit to a level that I think it could work. So I think it's kind of a buy. I think I'm into it for the rest of this season, but I really would like to see an incorporation of a little bit more change up and curve. And I kind of think you might, because 77 pitches, four innings, they had him pitch capped. I think you get later into games, he's going to throw some of those secondaries a bit more, and he's not as dominantly of a just two-pitch pitcher.
Yeah, no, and Eno Saris put out a tweet a few days back about the stuff plus numbers for Horton in AAA, and outside of the sweeper, they weren't overly great, especially, you know, the fastball was like around average, but the changeup and curveball weren't great. But I just kind of wonder if that was a little bit due to the fact that he just didn't throw him a whole ton, and maybe you'll see more consistency from, you know, those two offerings if he does incorporate them a little bit more. And I think he's a fine buy right now in general. Like, I'm not, you know, one that thinks that Horton's going to be like this top 25 starter or anything like that, but
no,
he is one of the top, you know, 10 to 15 or so pitching prospects in the game. And just given how much the kind of the perceived value and price tag dropped, because he, you know, missed a lot of time in 2024, was kind of, you know, mediocre when he was on the mound last season. So you saw that value drop after it was kind of pretty high in 2023, but 1.24 ERA in six starts this year, whip under one, you know, strikeout rate pretty solid as well, over 30%. You know, did have a, you know, higher walk rate, but that was more so his first three starts. I think he only had three walks combined in his last three AAA starts, so that was coming down, which was nice to see. But yeah, I like Horton. I don't love Horton long term, but definitely think there's some value to be had here, and you know, it'd be interesting to see. You know, you imagine that hitters will kind of hone in on that four seam sweeper pretty soon here, see if he can make that adjustment, and maybe incorporate in that changeup or curveball a little bit.
Do you, Cade Horton or Logan Henderson rest of season?
Rest of season, I think rest of season is actually closer than the long term for these two, but I'll lean Horton there, but I don't think it's like a big gap rest of season.
Okay, me too. I'm in that same space.
Yeah, I think there might be a bigger gap in the long term value for those two, but yeah, rest of season, I think they can have pretty similar value. But yeah, I will lean Horton. We'll go from one Chicago team to the other here. Tim Elko got the call up for the Chicago White Sox. He's an interesting one. He's a bit older. He's turned 26 back in late December, and it was never a guy that was ranked super high as a prospect. Was a 10th rounder back in 2022, you know, out of Mississippi. So you know, never the huge prospect shine for a Tim Elko, but everywhere he's gone, he's hit pretty well. He hit 295 with 28 home runs back in 2023. That was low A, high A, and double A. Last year between double A and triple A, 289 with 18 home runs. This year, 348 with 10 home runs in 31 games for triple A Charlotte. But triple A Charlotte is a, you know, very hitter friendly environment. You know, the power is absolutely there. And you saw that with the kind of the quality of contact he had in triple A, where it was a 53% hard hit rate, 13.5% barrel rate. But the contact skills are, you know, they're below 70% overall. So, you know, a little bit of good, a little bit of bad here with Tim Elko, but maybe he gets some solid run here with this White Sox team moving forward. Do you have any intrigue here, Welsh, with Tim Elko?
I have intrigue to the level that, like, if you're in a deeper league and you're power chasing, I think that's where Tim Elko lives. I've never, you know, to his credit, like, the guy is hit for average. Since 2023 on, he's just hit. Like, he's pretty much, outside of one spot, been like 280 or higher. He was also in the Arizona Fall League this past year, showed off some of that really good power. People kind of forget, you know, obviously the Fall League is, you know, built up with Cags and Leo DeVries and stuff like that. But ironically, two of the hotter, older prospects, Otto Kemp and Tim Elko, were both in the AFL. And he's always showed off really good power, but I've never bought the average. And I still don't buy the average, regardless of his success as clearly an older player at every single level. The strikeout thing has always been a problem. He has also, at every stop through 2023, starting at double A, or essentially, I guess a better way to put it is double A on, he's had it between like a 28.5 and 35% strikeout rate at every single level. And you saw some of that in the AFL as well. So where he shined in triple A this year is he's hitting the ball crazy. He has almost 116 exit velocity he had in AAA, which is absurd. 93 average exit velocity, awesome. 52% hard hit rate. These are all great things. But he also had like a 28% strikeout rate. So I think he lives in like a 240-ish type of hitter. He's a more prolific power hitter than, you know, the theoretical replacement of like Andrew Vaughn. But I think he can thrive. I think he, like, on a team that doesn't have a lot going for them, on a team that's going to create opportunity for players to be out there, I think he has massive, massive raw power. The difference is going to be, can he live as a 230, 240 hitter, or is he going to struggle even more mightily with the strikeout issues and be a 200 hitter, and then he will not be fantasy relevant. So I think there's something there for Elko. I'm not screaming to go and buy him, but I think deeper 15-team leagues that have, like, you know, you two with five outfielder and corner infield, like, if you got injuries, I think Elko could have some fantasy relevancy, and I think he's going to be out there for a while. But I'm a little less, like, I use this term a lot, like, he's like the backup quarterback in town. Like, everybody loves the backup quarterback at all times. Everybody, and that in baseball, just everybody loves the AAA prospect when a guy's struggling. It's like, we'll see how Tim Elko goes. He's older, hopefully, you know, he's, the development goes with the age as well, but he's got to cut the strikeouts at the major league level. And I'm just not sure, can he really thrive in a fantasy environment when, you know, there were guys like Pavin Smith's obviously not available anymore, but it's like he was going in the 400 or 500s. Like, there's a lot of corner infielders that are out there, but I think there's definite power intrigue for people that play in any extra boosted power format.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with Elko as well. Deep league power source. Like we both said, the power is absolutely legit. And if he can just keep the average somewhat respectable, like not just, not go down near the Mendoza line and be striking out like 38, 40% of the time or anything like that, I think he can have some value here because who else is going to really take that spot? Unless he completely just hits terribly, I think he's going to get some decent run here. I mean, their bench right now is Matt Theis, it's Lennon Sosa, it's Jacob Amaya, it's Michael A. Taylor. Like, it's not like there's anybody really taking that spot from him anytime soon, and I don't think there's any other bats that are going to be up soon for, you know, the White Sox. You know, Colson Montgomery is not really he's back in Arizona last time I knew, working on a swing. So
Tom 2 days ago. Yeah, he's great.
How did he, not to switch subject right here, but how did he look out there?
He's okay. I mean, like, he's going to thrive. It's a weird environment. I know we're going to talk about it in a little bit, but complex is a super weird environment because you'll have, for the majority, it's like 85%, you know, these like 18, 19 year old, like maybe there's a draft guy or two. There's a lot of like from the Dominican, summer league guys. It's just like first stateside stuff. So what I'm getting at is like more seasoned guys, you expect them to thrive. Like it's cool that I can get fun videos and stuff like that of a 23-year-old prospect hitting homers. You expect them to thrive. So all of that to say that like Montgomery looks okay. His swing path looks a little bit shorter right now. But I've got to get another game or two because they literally sent him down here to rework his swing. There's a couple guys that are out here, like Ethan Salas is out here right now. But they put him on the IL. But I actually think the day they placed him on the IL, I saw him because it was a crazy day at the Padres because it was Jackson Merrill rehabbing. And then Trevor Hoffman came to come watch. And then Ethan Salas came out to come and sit and watch as well. But like, Salas was fine. And Salas actually went back into the cages, which are right behind the field. And he started swinging a bat and he was swinging on a tee. So just pointing this out that they put him on the IL, but I think there's also a developmental, this is instead of putting him on the developmental list. I think they're here to rework some stuff. And I think that's part of it. So coming, bringing it back to what you actually asked, that's what Colson Montgomery is out here to do. And I think it's been okay, but he's not lighting the world on fire and he's got to kind of rework these tools. And, you know, you want them to thrive. Like a guy like Elko probably would thrive, but when you get little tiny advance, or you get these young pitchers that know how to throw a breaking pitch, you know, some guys are eating this stuff up. And that's going to be the big question to figure out, like with Elko, like where he's at. I'm looking at his swinging strike numbers in the minor leagues and it's like, it's actually gone down. It was actually was pretty good this year. So we're going to have to see if, you know, if that ends up being something where he can lower that strikeout rate. But as you mentioned, he's just got really poor contact percentage stuff. And that's also Colson Montgomery's issue. You know, White Sox in general, it's like you have these loud tools with some poor contact rates, except for the guys that they went and bought in other organizations like Braden Montgomery and Chase Mydroth.
Yeah, Mydroth's like the anti version of that.
That's exactly right.
He's a 1,000,000% contact rate and gets on base like super high clip. Yeah, this doesn't really impact the ball that much. But yeah, you know, Colson Montgomery too is intriguing because he's always been the one where obviously not much of a speedster. So, you know, he needed that bat to stand out and it has at times, but yeah, he's really in a rough spot right now. Like the contact rates haven't been great. The K rate, you know, not great. So I don't know. I've never been a big Montgomery guy, but
I was, and I have been, and because I've seen him shine, but I think it was, I'm also one of the biggest culprits of falling in love with tools, regardless of warning signs. And it's just, it's a, you know, and it works and sometimes it doesn't. I just was talking to someone about this yesterday where, and I appreciate them saying this. They were like, you know, they were telling me I'm not afraid to be like, hey, you're wrong or right about this. And I think that, you know, obviously there's a lot of people in the industry that are terrified of being wrong or being told that they're wrong or whatever. It's just whatever. It's just the prospects, you know, that's how it goes. It's volatile. Yep. But like, you know, for guys that I can, you know, absolutely nail and I'm just like, I'm on it. I also love George Valera. You know what I mean? Like I'm sitting out there talking about, and George Valera, by the way, just hit a homer yesterday in Complex on a side field looking to get back. But it, like loud tools, when it's raw, I can fall over my feet for. Because like sometimes there are players that they come out the gates and they've just got the intangibles isn't the right word, but they've got the core pieces where it's like they don't strike out, they make contact, and it's like, will they get to their power and will they get to this? There's those type of guys. Then there's the total packages, guys that are already getting to all of it. And those are usually the guys, you know, that Mades and stuff were falling over. And then there are these guys as well that they've got these loud tool sets, but then they've got these big flashing warning signs. Spencer Jones is a prime example of that. Colson Montgomery, I think, has kind of become that as well, where it's like, man, if it clicks, watch the hell out. But then you kind of also need to start putting it to organizations more that it's like, all right, if I put to you right now, Spencer Jones, who I know you're not like the biggest on, or Colson Montgomery, and you say, who do you think has the better likelihood to find it? Who would you say?
To find it, I'd say Colson Montgomery.
See, now that's interesting because now here's the only reason I would go on the opposite direction potentially is organizational training And like, yep. Do you trust the White Sox? I trust the Yankees more developmental system to be able to fix some of those problems. Now, maybe both of those are bad examples, by the way. Maybe they're both just going to be failures. But my whole point of what I was saying was like, there might start to be these little intangibles of looking at organizations and being like, can they fix some of those loud tools? Maybe something I need to start paying attention to. And I would put the Yankees on a higher end of like, oh, I think maybe they can fix some of these more than the White Sox, but maybe I'm being silly because like, look at, you know, Volpe's falling down and stuff like that. But I think my trust in the White Sox being able to fix Montgomery right now is it's a little bit of a problem.
Yeah, no, my trust in the Yankees is higher than my trust in the White Sox. I don't have like the super high trust on the Yankees, but definitely higher than the White Sox.
Or maybe the players just can't be saved. You know, maybe Spencer Jones just can't be saved. He's using a torpedo bat, and the average still kind of sucks, and he's still striking out. Like, he had some moments where he started freaking going off, but he's the prime example of those loud tool guys that I just can't help sometimes. Some of them get me.
Oh, yeah, Spencer Jones, especially, obviously, we've seen, you know, huge raw power. He's a good athlete for his size, too. Like, you kind of wonder what if it just clicks a little bit at the plate with the, you know, the contact and the strikeout rates being just not terrible.
But they got to do it at some point. And that's where, like, I fall in. Like, it's one thing when, you know, you and I have had this, we probably had this conversation for like 2 years. It's one thing when I kind of, and this is, I'm talking over myself, but this is one of those things that, like, I try to get out a whole lot. And I can appreciate anybody that out there that looked at Spencer Jones and they're just like, nope, it'll never happen. But like, when we were like a year and a half ago and he's at high A and he's this big 6'7" guy who's hitting massive homers, stealing bases, getting on base and stuff. Like, I don't think it's outlandish to be like, listen, this might click through. And if it clicks through, it's crazy. But even I have to admit, we're now into like, you know, this is like the third year. We're at double A. He's not advancing. His tools are still loud. 6 stolen bases, 9 homers. He's got a 372 OBP and over 900 OPS. He's got a 220 average again. Like, the two, like, how much longer even can I defend and do the like, okay, we got the 220 average, and then I'm not looking at it this moment. But you know, strikeout rate, I know, is like, it's over 30% or something. You know, it's some stupid number. So it's like that, those are the things that it's like, okay, now we've had so many years of development, maybe we do need to start coming off. So that's a little bit of like my process with a lot of these guys.
Yeah, and I just pulled it up. Jones is 36.3% strikeout rate. Yeah. Was 36.8 last year. Contact rate 58.5%.
Oh, I mean, it's just the worst. And see that. So that's the thing where it's like, okay, hand up, I'm wrong. Like, it's not gonna get to the level, so we got to move him back down. But I'm less willing to, especially for a specific players like those, just to absolutely drop while they're still in the heavy developmental part of their game. Though, to be fair, the kid's only 23 years old. Double A is probably the most important. I mean, this is a double-edged thing. Double A is the most important, but he spent 2 years there and he's struggling maybe the most with the contact rate at this. So that might be the biggest telltale sign. But when they're at A and high A, and like, I would kind of come back to the Lazaro Montes thing, where I don't remember, it was you or Clegg or whatever. And not that it's a win or anything like that, but everybody cited like Lazaro's contact rates. And it's like, you know, he's a pretty good year. Like, he's kind of defying that. Like, he was one of those guys that had like high batting averages and he had like really good success. But a lot of people be like, well, you know, I don't love the contact rate, and that's the thing that's going to fall back through. And then he had a really, really good early part of the season. I need to look at the stats right now because I might be talking out my butt here, but let's see. He's 276, just like normal. He does have a high strikeout rate still, but 16% walk rate, 7 homers. You know, he's kind of still defied some of that, but he's only at high A. So now he's going to go to double A. Let's see where that moves on to. So, like, again, my process would be a lot more of like, hey, listen, man, this guy is young, dominating, 300, 280 plus averages, homers. He's walking a ton. Like, I see him in person. Like, I think this can work. This can bounce back. We definitely need to see more because the strikeout rate at these lower levels are bad, but he continues to succeed. And we will learn a lot as we move on. But I do see the 67% contact rate, and that one gets me a little bit too.
Yeah. And even like, that's not a great rate, but yeah, that's the reason why I still had some hope for Jones, like, back in like 2023, because he was like over 70% contact then, Then it went down to 61.5% last year and 58.5% this year. So like those, like you get down. I mean, we've seen some big power guys succeed in like the upper 60% contact range. Like even Judge for the most part was like in the low 70s. You know, I'm not obviously not comparing anybody to Judge, but you know, you can make it work with a little bit of lower contact rate with if you have that big power. But when you get down like into the mid to low 60s or hell below 60%, yeah, that is a massive red flag. In fact, that Jones has now been, he got the AA later on in 2023, he was there all of last year, and now it's still there. So, and all these issues have not gotten better. But all right, moving on. We got Evan Carter got recalled as well. Still only, it's crazy. Evan Carter is still only 22 years old. You would have think he'd like, he was 24, 25 at this point, but still only 22 years old. Had a home run on Saturday, so that was nice. First home run of the season, but it's been a rough last, you know, year and a half or so for Carter after his, you know, impressive rookie year with that, you know, postseason run with the Rangers in 2023. But the back issues have completely derailed his career since then, to the point where, you know, I don't know what to think with Evan Carter right now. Even this year, when he was down in AAA, it was an 85.5 mile an hour average exit velocity. Hard hit rate was below 30%. So still not getting to that power. He was never a massive power guy, but definitely had, you know, decent enough power to the point where, like, oh, maybe this guy's a 20 homer bat. Now that's a major question mark. The positives, you know, he still has that good approach at the plate, you know, can still make contact, even though it hasn't been great this year with the contact. I'm not like super concerned there, but I just don't know what to think, what to expect with Evan Carter right now. Well, where are you at on him? Again, still young, has, you know, showed that talent, you know, when he was a prospect and a rookie, but where are you at on him these days?
Kind of with you. I'm a little torn. Piece of PNI on leading off our fantasy show we do Monday through Friday. If anyone ever wants to watch, by the way, 12 p.m. Eastern daily, we live stream. I just did all that, but I think we also have a live stream. That was our Twitch show, twitch.tv/fantasypros. But we also have this YouTube on Wednesdays we do. And we got into this like big old thing about a Jack Leiter. And then we got into this big thing about James Outman versus Evan Carter. And they're both just suboptimal options, but where like, my interest was kind of minimal on Outman. His was absolutely abysmal on Evan Carter. And I kind of understand some of it. But at the same time, like, he's a super young hitter who was built around a lot of contact. If people remember, there was just like nothing but Kyle Tucker comps. The problem is like his approach and his game is not like Kyle Tucker. It's going to look a lot more like, I feel like 3 or 4 years ago, like remember Brandon Nimmo when it was just like, you know, 15 homers and 10 stolen bases with some average and stuff. Like, I think that's the type of guy he's going to be. And I think he still can be. Hard hit rates stink right now. He's barreling up a little bit, but he's doing what this is like the CJ Abrams, Ha-Sung Kim school of hitting to me was it's like you have lower barrels and you've got to try to launch angle that bad boy and get it up in the air. And he's got a almost 17 degree launch angle right now and he's pulling the ball. So it's optimized pulled fly balls is how he's going to hit homers, but he doesn't walk. He has cut his strikeout rate. So I'm kind of going through some of the motions here to tell you, like, I'm kind of torn. I'm not sure who he is. He doesn't have any ability to hit extra bases off of lefties. He's a poor lefty guy. It's all going to be power off the righties. So I'll just throw it at you to say that, like, I think he's going to make a lot of contact. I think his average can come back up. I think he can get back to a regular. That's why they DFA'd Leody Taveras.
Yep.
But is he going to be a great fantasy option? I'm not so sure about that. I think he's a quintessential number 7 or 8 hitter, maybe walks into 10 homers if he's lucky. I just don't think he's that much of a fantasy option right now, and he's going to have to prove it to us otherwise.
Yeah, no, I don't have a lot of faith right now. Like, those back issues really, really concern me. Like, that just completely zap. We talk about how his shoulder can zap power, you know, hand, wrist injuries can zap power. Backs absolutely can, and they can just completely derail everything you got going at the plate. Is how much torque you need to swing a bat hard, you know, that can really limit you. And, you know, I'm not saying he's still dealing with that issue. I think he's healthy right now, but the fact that how much does it limit him long term? Will that reoccur? You know, I think back issues are really easy to kind of re-injure, just given, again, what you do on a baseball field every single day. So, you know, is he an injury risk going forward? I hate to say that about a 22-year-old, but it's a question I've had in the back of my mind now. So, yeah, if the cost is like dirt cheap, where it's like you don't have to give up much at all just to take a flyer on him, sure. I'm not opposed to doing that, but I don't
know. He's got a 90% contact rate with an almost 20% pulled aired percentage. So, I mean, that is a guy that's making a lot of contact, and when he can pull it, he's getting it in the air, and that might lead to homers in a pretty hitter-friendly environment. So, I mean, there are some potential pluses.
Yeah,
dude just absolutely. Needs to hit for contact. Just you need to hit the ball.
Yep, absolutely. So. And again, he's going to pretty much start every day against righties moving forward. But that Texas team in general has just kind of had a really rough year. Like, you know, Langford's looked good. You know, Seager, when he's on the field, looks good. You know, but everyone else, I mean, can we throw a quick shout out, some love to Josh Smith. Like, that dude is like the most underrated guy on that Texas team. And one of the most underrated guys in baseball. Like, everyone else is, you know, up and down that lineup. He's just been like, they're like kind of consistent dude, and that
play
was leading
center
off
field,
them.
Play shortstop, play third base, play hits over base 300. Hell yeah, yeah. Dude, yeah, I completely agree. He's like the ultimate super util guy. Lots of contact, pretty mid to average like underlying skills, but that's the kind of Evan Carter thing you hope for. It's like, well, you know, yeah, maybe not might have like a lot of like raw ability and stuff like that, but if you know you can make contact in that hitter friendly environment, get the ball in the air and stuff, good stuff might happen, and he's stealing bases. So yeah, I totally agree. Great underrated player in Josh Smith.
Yeah, dude needs more love than he gets for sure. All right, let's move out to Arizona now. First off, we'll talk some guys that Welsh has already seen out there in Arizona. You know, he's at the field very frequently. We'll start with probably the biggest name here, and Charlie Condon, you know, third overall pick in last summer's draft out of the University of Georgia, came off two huge years. His 2 years at Georgia, 386, 484, 800 with 25 bombs in 56 games in 2023. And then 433, 556 with a 1,009 slug, 37 home runs in 60 games last year. I mean, he was, you know, arguably the best player in the country the last 2 years. But then after the draft, went to high A, Spokane, and only slashed 180, 248, 270. With 4 walks to 34 strikeouts and only 1 home run. And now he's out in Arizona kind of rehabbing before he, you know, goes back to high A in a little bit here. What have been your thoughts on Condon so far, and kind of where are you at on him long term?
So it's loaded there. I mean, you and I have done some pods. Everyone knows I wasn't the Condon guy out of the draft. That is one. I took some L's earlier. I'll take a big W for this, that I was not the Condon guy. Now, to be fair, I was more the Bizzana guy, and it looks like we all should have just been the Cags guy and not fallen into that trap. But I was never the big Condon guy, big power. But that aside, incredible, like, even if you're not a Condon guy, everyone could admit like that type of power in Colorado is a dream come true. So he got hurt. I think it was a wrist. It wasn't a wrist injury, right?
Hand wrist. Yeah.
Yeah. So he was out here like a ton. He was out in Arizona just a ton. Wrist injury, kept being out here. He was here all spring training, trying to get back. I went out about a week ago. It was the opening day of Complex. And I thought he was going to play. And I got out there and he was working out. I got there super early and I got to talk to him and he wasn't playing. And I was like, ugh, good spirits he seemed in, because he had just been playing. I don't even know if he had been in games. I think maybe he had been doing some light work in extended spring training, because I had been in some extended spring training games and I never saw him. But he was in good spirits, but he wasn't playing that first day. He's going to get into games. Record skip. Come to this Saturday, a week later, he's in the game and I saw him. He had already been in some games. He had been playing in the outfield. He had DH'd. It wasn't super great. I think maybe coming into the game, maybe he was around like 260 or something like that. No homers. It was okay. It was a bad outing I saw of him yesterday. Really bad outing. And I put out this video. It's getting some good traction, where I did a little super cut of his 3 strikeouts, because they played a 7-inning game. He was 0-for-3 with 3 strikeouts. So you got to see the strikeout pitch. I didn't do the whole thing. First pitch, he's looking. And I'll tell you this, the ump's zone wasn't super great. And little expletive on the first, he wasn't happy about the first strikeout. Second strikeout, it's a swinging strikeout. Third strikeout, he's looking again. But more so than anything else, just like watching him, the pitch recognition was horrific. And I will tell you, I've had more than a handful of people tell me that they're not into Condon, and that they know people that are not into Condon. And I was like, okay, you know, but it's raw skill set. He's a big, giant dude, you know, he's 6'6", you know, prototypical player, 220. It's like, it's what a right fielder or just a baseball player should be built out of. So like, you love that. Again, that's a loud tool set. But I had all these people tell me this. And then I go and watch him. And outside of just the physical strikeouts, the problem is he had zero pitch recognition. So he was looking fastball. And, you know, a couple times he got the first fastball, and whether it was, you know, it was usually obviously a foul off, tip it back. And then they throw him a secondary pitch, slider, changeup or something like that. And then buckle, swing through, wasn't on it. And then because of that, that next, and this is what was leading to the strikeouts, he couldn't pick up these fastballs coming back because they threw secondaries. And I was really thrown back by his inability to pick up anything. And then a lot of people have, in the comments of the tweet I put out, were like, yeah, not easy when you don't know what's going on. And because there's this whole thing about pitch in the SEC, specifically with Condon, knowing the pitches that were coming and blah, blah, blah. So people are running on it, but it was super apparent. Maybe he's still a little like dealing with the injury. Maybe he's in his head. I'll tell you, his mood was not the same yesterday as it was that last Saturday. They had a walk-off win in that game, and it was still pretty kind of mopey and stuff like that. But, you know, I just walked away with it. You got to be careful about one outing. You know this better than anybody, Cross, that yeah, like, you can't just see a guy once and just make all the decisions on it, positively or negatively.
Especially hitters.
But I was really thrown back by how much I didn't like what I saw. Now, back to the earlier conversation, lots of raw skills, so you can physically see it. Played okay out in left field, and you know, he can steal some bases. He's already stolen 4 bases in like 30 games in the minors, so that's good. But he's got an almost 50% strikeout rate in rookie ball this year. So that's the other piece of context. Like, you don't want to take short sample sizes, but this is a 22-year-old, one of the best college bats that we've seen in rookie ball, getting absolutely dominated. 50% strikeout rate out here is atrocious. I mean, that's where he's walked once. He's getting attacked and he's not meeting the call. He's got a 316 OBP. He looks bad. I'll be honest with you, without trying to freak out about it, I just didn't like it. And I think I also don't trust the organization. I don't trust the Rockies to be able to help developmentally.
Yep.
I think it's not great. There's no one out there like working with him. He was just kind of on his own in the game, striking out. And I think he said that he's going to Spokane this week. I don't know if that means that was his last game and it's Monday, or if it's later in the week. But Eric, I walked away being like, I don't think he can be a top 100 prospect right now, even though it's Colorado and stuff like that. Like, this might be a rough run. And maybe this would be me being more critical. Like, how far off is he from Spencer Jones? Maybe it's really not that far. And I've also moved Spencer Jones quite down a bit. But I guess the more important thing is, he should not be in the conversation of the Cags, the Kurtz, the Bazanas, but he also shouldn't be in the conversation of the Braden Montgomerys. He's not in that world. The Slade Caldwells, Ryan Waldschmidt. I would rather Ryan Waldschmidt than Charlie Condon right now. And I think that says a lot. And maybe it's a little bit overdramatic and we'll laugh about this at some point. Oh, can you believe blah, blah, blah. But this is a really bad outing in a rookie ball setting for a guy that not only is just striking out, but he's also not showing any good recognition. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's really concerning, especially with him being an SEC guy at the complex level. Like, you figured he'd have at least a little bit of success and not be struggling, or at least just not be struggling as much as he is. But yeah, I was absolutely one of the bigger Condon guys. I'll fully admit that. And, you know, it's still early. I'm not saying it's, you know, he's a complete bust yet. I think it's
totally early. That's important. Yeah. Everybody should know that. Like, all of these things are the now, like, development, it's not linear. There's still plenty of time.
Absolutely. Yeah. But right now it looks like an L, and looks like, you know, yeah, absolutely. I would rather have, yeah, Bazana, I still have, you know, very high. Braden Montgomery's, you know, sneaking in the top 25 territory from here now. Slade Caldwell, who we'll talk about here in a minute, you know, obviously has been a big riser so far this year. So, and obviously Jack and Kurtz and everybody. So yeah, Condon is, like, if I were to re-rank right now, Condon's probably, like, for 2024 FYPD, probably, like, I don't know, in the 15 range or something like that. Maybe,
you know, even what's
lower
so funny? You know what's so funny about that too is I remember the first initial one. I'm forgetting who it was, but some people had like CAGs outside the top 10. And it's so funny because it's like, that's Condon now. Like Condon, all along, it was like, oh, it's Condon in Colorado. It's going to be the things. And it's like, it looks so silly. If you would have looked like almost 1 year ago today, the narratives around Condon and CAGs versus what the narratives around Condon and CAGs are right now. They're polar opposites.
Yeah, complete 180. I think I had CAGs like 7 or 8 range initially. I think I moved them up to like 5 or 6, kind of like in my last iteration of my FYPD rankings last year. But yeah, like he'd be right now, it'd probably be, yeah, Kurtz. You know, Pisano would still be up there. CAGs would be up there. Obviously, Brad Montgomery. You know, I had him pretty high anyway. But, yep, it's amazing what not even a year can do. Well, we were doing rankings around this time last year before the draft. But
yeah, we're always doing that stuff. But, yeah, again, I will point out, like, this is great. Just my look. Like, my look, and I think I might have been fed a tiny bit by, like, you got to remember, I had a lot of people saying, like, oh, I don't like CAGs. Don't like it. It's not great. And then I get all that, and I'm like, okay, well, I want to see it. And then I go look, and it's like, probably couldn't have had a worse performance. 0 for 3, 3 strikeouts, right. Complex rookie ball. He had an opportunity to win the game for them, and that was the third strikeout in the video that's out there. It was just like, you can see it. You can see it on the video, and maybe he's just overly frustrated and, you know, who knows, competitive nature. I remember James Wood was horrible when he would come out here rehabbing when he was with the Padres. Saw him twice, and I had this weird thing about him where I was like, listen, I know he puts up big stats, but every time I see him, he sucks. He is horrific. And now he's one of the best young players in baseball. There could be something about the rehabby process or the competitive nature of where you're at in some guys as well. So I don't want to like have it both ways, but it's just like, I'm going to be down on Condon, but I don't think you know, I'm not ready to be out on, I'm not really out on anybody. I'm a lot less than most people, where I'm like, oh, this guy's done forever. And it's like, nah, dude, I've seen plenty of guys suck in the minors the whole time and then become legit. And I've seen legit prospects completely fall apart at the majors. So let's watch where the developmental goes, because it's still super early for him. But
yeah,
it's not been great.
Yeah, definitely not looking good right now. And that, yeah, that perceived value and that price tag are going down right now. But maybe you can use that to buy low. Not opposed to doing that either. But yeah, I'm very concerned right now with Charlie Condon. All right, before we head over to some Diamondbacks discussion, let's hit quickly here. Who are some other names out in Arizona right now at the complex level that have stood out to you so far this year, Welsh?
Yeah, I'll throw out a couple of names. I'll actually skip the Diamondback guys. I've talked about them a lot on my shows, and maybe we'll end up talking about them. A couple of players on the Angels, Josue Lugo. Has been awesome. He's actually one of the leaders in Arizona complex hits right now. So he's near the tippy top. I believe he is, I'm sorting this, he's at the top. I've seen him twice now. Big bodied kid with the Angels, one of their top prospects. Yeah, he leads. He's tied with Victor Figueroa, who is going to be leaving. He's like a high A guy with the Padres. He's been rehabbing. Lugo and Figueroa both have 12 hits. It's 3 more than the next player. He's hitting over 460. Lugo is. Doesn't have a ton of big counting stats. He does have quite a few doubles. He's not striking out a bunch. I think he is an impressive body who's making a ton of contact. I'm very into him, though the organization I don't love. Also, a really fun moment for me, you might dig this, is Lucas Ramirez, Manny Ramirez's kid, is out here playing, and I got his first homer. And it's really interesting.
You got that? Nice.
That's me. That was me. And by the way, this is what you'll love. I got a little follow from Manny Ramirez now. So that was a highlight for me. But I had saw him. So that, you know, the Colorado Rockies game at the opening ACL I went to, that was against the Angels. Lucas Ramirez, first at bat, bam, hit right on the hand. And then he proceeds to bounce back, get 2 more hits. Now we pull it to a couple days ago where I end up seeing him at the Padres. And to be fair, they lit up the Padres. But Lucas Ramirez looked really good. He was making some strong, strong contact, and then he crushes one to right center. Good, strong lefty bat. You can go and see the video on my Twitter out there. There might be something there. You know, he's 19 years old, and, you know, sometimes you like 17, 18-year-olds will pop in there. But I thought Lucas has looked pretty decent so far in a couple of my looks that I've seen him at, and he's kind of just really been able to bounce back. So I think he's a impressive guy to look at. A couple others. Ching Sing Ko. I don't know if I said that correctly, with the Los Angeles Dodgers. Dude, he is huge. And this one of the coolest moments in the complex I've had in a long time was going to Camelback Ranch this week, and I had a major league pitching matchup. It was Rhett Lauder versus Clayton Kershaw on the backfield. Crazy. I've never had an, you know, I've seen guys, you know, like Johnny Cueto and stuff, and you see okay matchups, but two major leaguers. Both of these guys were getting close to unhittable. Clayton Kershaw was literally unhittable. Six innings, no hits against the Reds. But one thing that stood out was Ko hit this monster double off of Rhett Lauder. And he's a big dude with the Dodgers, crushed it to right, hit the wall, almost was a homer. I think he might be someone that people want to pay attention to. And then the last two, and then if you have any follow-ups on here, Yonaker Ugarte with the Royals. I really like his approach, really good athlete. And then the kid that was getting Condon, I believe it's the last strikeout in the video, if you want to see, Wilmys Polino was a freaking monster on the mound for the Rockies. It's a Rockies pitcher, might be a tiny bit small, but I think he's an 18-year-old kid. Dude, he was throwing gas. I wish I could have got to the radar, but I'll tell you, it looked 97, 98. He was pumping straight gas. He's now under a 3 ERA. That was a huge outing for him. Wilmys Polino with the Rockies, Yonaker Ugarte with the Royals, Chin-Hsien Ko with the Dodgers, and then Lugo and Ramirez both with the Angels. So those are some standouts after the first week of the AFL or ACL.
Yeah, Lugo is definitely one that I'm intrigued by because I don't like that Angel system much at all. I mean, I'm not like super high on Christian Moore or George Klassen. I like Caden Dana. He's my number one in that system. But you know, I was never a big like Nelson Rada guy or a Sam Aldegary guy. So you know, not really a lot of guys in that system I like. I think only, let me pull it up here. Yeah, I only have seven Angels prospects currently in my 500, but you know, the most exciting, I guess, you know, in that org for me at least is Lugo. I didn't have him ranked like super
Lugo
high.
Over Christian Moore.
No, I had Moore ranked higher.
Oh, okay, okay.
That might change because, like I said, I'm concerned with Moore's contact skills right now, and he's been pretty mediocre since like that really super hot like 9-game stretch to start his career after the draft. But you know, Lugo obviously much further away, much younger. You know, only just turned 18 in January, but he's got that, you know, like you mentioned, that big body, projectable body, you know, got the raw skills are absolutely there with him. So
yeah,
he's one that they could really, really pop this year. And you know, I probably get move him up in my rankings. I didn't have him ranked like super highly. I don't think he's like top 100 or anything like that right yet, but could he be, you know, by, you know, July, August or so? Yeah. I think that upside's absolutely there with Lugo. You know, he runs a good bit too. Maybe that kind of slows down a bit if he fills out the frame a bit more. But, yeah, definitely probably the most intriguing all-around prospect in that Angel system, would you say? You think that's an accurate statement there, Welsh?
Lugo?
Yeah. Highest upside, I should say.
Yeah, pretty much. Christian, I'm not ready to give up. Like, I think Christian Moore stands out like big, big time to me. But I think there's an organizational difference between Moore and Lugo and the next guy. I think those guys are like tier one, you know. Yep. And then it's like, I mean, maybe tier one B or however you want to do it. Like Dana and Klassen are kind of there. And then there's just this big collection of just like, you know, other dudes. Like maybe Lucas Ramirez gets there.
Yeah.
It's not a great order.
No, definitely not. But yeah, you mentioned, you know, being a Boston guy here, you know, Manny Ramirez's kid. Absolutely. It's fun that like, all these guys' kids that we grew up watching, like, you know, Sheffield's kid and Poppy's kid and Manny's kid. And who's the other one? It was like four that were like,
well, dude, the
same team.
You want to find a place like, I love this. How about the Rangers? The Rangers have David Ortiz's kid. They have Vladimir Guerrero's kid, and they have Hanley Ramirez's kid. You want to talk about like,
oh, Hanley's, you know, kid. That's the other one I was trying to think of. Yeah.
Yeah. The Nepo babies, like the Rangers. That's a place I'm definitely targeting too. But yeah, big highlight for me. Like, I'm like, oh my gosh, Manny Ramirez is commenting on my video and following me. Like there's a highlight. There's a nice highlight.
That's always fun. I had the little back and forth with Bartolo Colon the other day, who now follows me on Twitter. That was pretty cool. Like, you know, the king Bartolo Colon, but yeah, it's always fun doing what we do. Sometimes we, you know, interact with, you know, as I'm sure you have as well, like with prospects, family members, like moms, dads, aunts, uncles, brothers, cousins, whatever. That's always fun.
I've told it before. Mackenzie Gore's parents way back in the day, like they would DM me every time and be like, are you going to see McKenzie start tonight? And then like one time I live streamed it for them. I live streamed video for them. So yeah, it's a fun thing to be able to do for sure.
Oh yeah. I ended up my first interaction with prospects, family members was with Alex Fajito. When he was in Double A, I was going to a start, and I was actually interviewing him after the game, and I just happened to park literally right next to like his aunt, uncle, and cousins, and we were like walking from the ballpark from the parking lot into the ballpark together, just chatting it up and talking about how it was like Fajito Fridays when he was at Florida, and just kind of talking about Alex growing up and stuff. So that was pretty cool, and
that's the best.
Talked with Simeon Woods Richardson's father when he was in Double A, was watching his bullpen. I talked to this like older guy just like videoing and looking all happy, and I'm talking with him, and it was his dad, and he was just beaming from ear to ear with that dad, like so proud of his kid type of thing. And yeah, that's like the low key.
It's a good highlight for stuff what we do. Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't talk about it a lot, but that's one of the sneaky fun things I love about what we do. All right, let's go over to the Diamondbacks discussion here. Got a few major leaguers, a few minor leaguers on the docket to close out the show. Want to start with Josh Naylor, though, someone I pushed up to my number five in my Dynasty first base rankings. He feels, there's so many big names at first right now, some of which are hitting well this year, some of which are struggling. We all know the issues that Cass has had before he got hurt. Vinny P's been scuffling. Been kind of a weird year at the first base spot, but the one guy that's just been there and just hitting well, Josh Naylor, 293, 365, 442 slash line, 4 home runs, 6 steals, and 168 plate appearances. Pretty solid quality of contact, 90-mile-an-hour average exit velocity, 45% hard hit rate. Never been a huge masher, but solid power guy, and just keeps the strikeout rate very low. Career high walk rate this year as well. Naylor is only 27 years old. Welsh, you think he's become pretty underrated for fantasy purposes right now?
I do. Yeah, I completely. I think you said it really well. He's tracking to be like another 95 to 100 RBI season. He's pairing that back over with the Diamondbacks. You got aggressive runners on the Diamondbacks. It's one of the lowest strikeout rates he's had of his career. He's walking more in his career. He's still super young, and it's a great environment. So for sure, I think the question would be like long standing, him signing a contract here and stuff. But either way, like wherever he goes, I think he's a pretty underrated first baseman, and surrounded around guys, great dynasty debate would be like, I know Freddie Freeman's amazing, but like 36-year-old Freddie Freeman or a 27-year-old Josh Naylor, those are the type of dynasty discussions we have. So yeah, I think he's underrated.
It's funny you mentioned Freeman. I literally have them back to back in my overall dynasty rankings right now. I have Naylor ahead. He's my number five. Freeman's my number six, but even in my overall, I think they're like 52 and 53 overall or something like that. Freeman obviously is going to keep trending down as he gets older, even though he's still phenomenal and he's still Freddie Freeman. But yeah, I think in the, when you look at all these, the bigger named guys, the Matt Olsons, the Bryce Harpers, et cetera, it's like Naylor kind of gets, a little bit lost in the shuffle. As he's not a guy that is flashy. He doesn't have the huge power that you usually expect from first baseman, but he's got some power. He could run a little bit, and he gives you that good average for the most part. I saw that one year where he dipped to like 240 something, but yeah, I think he's top five and probably here to stay. And unless the Kurtz gets up there, Cags is up there, and Eldridge maybe, and they knock him kind of down a spot or two. But yeah, I think he definitely is underrated right now. Now over to the pitching side, Corbin Burnes just threw 7 shutout innings on Saturday against the Dodgers, which I did not expect, and has a 2.95 ERA so far this year. Oh, that's great. But he has a 1.31 whip. He has a 4.68 xERA and only an 8.4% strikeout minus walk rates. So I guess you can't really be too pissed right now because he does have the sub 3 ERA, but and I'm kind of wondering right now, Welsh, if Burnes is a sell because of that surface ERA, because, last year he kind of reworked the cutter later in the year. It was, a tick slower, but had more, movement on it. So you're kind of hoping that that could stop the downward trend in the whiff rates, but that has not been the case. Career worst strikeout rate this year, career worst whiff rate this year. So I'm definitely starting to get pretty concerned that the old Burnes is never coming back, and the new Burnes is going to be just a kind of a decent but not spectacular arm for fantasy. And what are your thoughts on Byrne so far?
Yeah, I mean, I would throw this out that, you know, because you have like Burns and Gallen on here. My only pushback on the like buy sell thing is I think the narrative out there is, oh, you know, Gallen is talented and young and he will bounce back because he's had some good starts. Burns' velo is down and he's trending in the wrong direction. He's not going to. He's the and I'm kind of inversed on that. Like, I'm discouraged by Zach Gallen's fastball more than I am even Corbin Burns in general, because Corbin Burns has velo downs, but Gallen has proven, like, you know, his fastball is not good enough that if he's not throwing it for strikes, he can't do anything else. Guys just sit on his secondary stuff. And then if they're reacting, you can react to his fastball better because it's slower and guys are crushing it. So I'm down on him, where there's a little part of me that's still buying, you know, this bounce back start, I think, increased the strikeout rate for Burns that popped back out. I think some of the surface numbers are pretty bad, but he's had this little bit of a banged up injury. I think I'm still a buy on Corbin Burns. He's still young enough. He's 30. I think there's been some weird aberrations for this year, but, you know, like the whiff rate on the curveball is not crazy, crazy down. It's really been the slider. It's whatever's going on with the slider. He's throwing the slider harder this year, but it's way less effective, like, especially from a strikeout perspective. It's giving up a little bit more of a batting average. The whiff rate stinks compared to where it was last year. That I would rather buy Burns, because I legit think the cost of Burns and Gallen is not that far off, and I think Burns is a more superior pitcher right now.
Yeah, yeah. I still believe that Burns is more superior than Gallen. I wonder if, I mean, it's hard to say with Gallen, but, you know, back in 2023, he threw, like, what was it, 260, 270 combined innings or something like that between.
Yeah, with the playoffs.
I think he had like 218, 19, 20, something like that in regular season, and threw like 40 more in the postseason or something like that, which they needed him to do. But I just kind of wonder, because, like, he wasn't the same last year, and he's still kind of, you know, not what we're, you know, used to from Gallen.
I think the story is telling us there's more to worry about with Corbin Burns right now, with the velo down, with the walk rate up. But I also think some of the, like, the percentage stats you're looking at, they're like way out of abnormal. So either A, I'm wrong and he's just a shell of who he was and he's going to be trash all year, or B, this is a little bit more of an aberration and we're going to see a much stronger second half. But he had a bad second half last year and it's carrying over into this year. So again, there's a little bit more feel than there is, like, hardcore, like, underlying analysis that is pushing my narrative.
Yeah, with Burns, I'm just concerned about the whiff rates right now. I mean, changeup whiff rate is nearly identical to last year. But as you mentioned, the slider is like the biggest one. The curveball is down a bit too, down 5% from last year, 37.8 to 32.8. But yeah, that slider's gone from 46% down to 18.2%. Like, that is a massive, massive drop. So, you know, we've seen Burns, like I mentioned, he's been one to tinker before, you know, even in season, and then make some adjustments. So I wouldn't put that past him to do that again this year. So yeah, I'm not out on Burns by any means. I've always been a big Burns guy. I mean, got him in a lot of leagues early before he became, like, you know, the dominant Burns. So definitely have a soft spot for Corbin Burns. He definitely helped me out in a lot of dynasty leagues. But yeah, I don't think he's going to be, you know, top 10 ever again, but can he still be a solid arm? Yeah, I think he absolutely can. I just don't think the ace Burns coming back, but I want to see those whiff rates tick back up. So I guess I'm in wait and see mode here.
A little wishy-washy, it happens.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of there's some good, some bad in the profile. We shall see. Now shifting over to the guy he throws the ball to, Gabriel Moreno. You know, is Gabriel Moreno ever going to be a thing, Welsh? I feel like we keep waiting for him. Like, obviously the contact rates have always been really good with him, and then they still are. He's 85% zone, a little over 80% overall, you know, keeps the K rate, you know, better than league average. That's always been the thing with him. And he's always hit the ball, you know, pretty hard in general. And the quality of contact has been there, and it's, you know, career best marks for him this year, 92.2 mile an hour average exit velocity and a 47.5% hard hit rate. But the ground ball rate still super high, even though it's come down a bit. Barrel rate's lower. You know, this doesn't hit the ball at ideal angles. So he has the one home run right now in 111 plate appearances. So I don't know. He's still only 25, though. Like, Moreno's still very, very young. Are you still into Moreno long term for dynasty, or Is this just kind of what he is at this point?
I think it's kind of what he is. I think there's the opportunity for him to change, but as a Diamondback fan, he's the quintessential better real life player than fantasy player. You're right. He does make a lot of contact, but it's at that like low barrel rate that screams of like Luis Arraez. He's walking, he's not striking out, but he doesn't pull the ball in the air. Like he's getting the ball in the air more than he's ever done this year. Awesome. 11 degree launch angle, but he doesn't pull it. It's a 2% pull there. So he's a line drive hitter. Like he hits across his body and that's who he is. And he makes contact and maybe there'll be a time where he's like he was a 280 guy, I guess, 2 years ago, like that would be it, but it's low counting stats. They're done with putting him in the middle of the order. I just think there are better fantasy options, kind of across the board. So I'm not super into Gabby anymore for fantasy.
Yeah, I think he's kind of gotten into catcher two ranks. He's a fine second catcher in a two catcher league, but I've kind of given up hope that he's going to be like a top 10, top 12, and C1 option for your fantasy team, especially with all the young catchers in the game right now. Obviously we just got Augustine Ramirez up recently, and pretty good crop of prospects. We're waiting on Basayo to come up, Ballesteros to come up, and we had Baldwin come up too. So there's a lot of good young catchers in this game, which is just pushing them further down rankings here. So yeah, I'm very lukewarm on Moreno these days.
Yeah.
All right, over to the prospect ranks here. We'll start with Jordan Lawler, who's had a very fun season so far in AAA. He has cooled off a bit of late, but overall, still, as of Sunday afternoon, it's about 2:30 Eastern time right now on Sunday. Lawler slashing .336, .411, .584 this year. He has 15 doubles already, which probably leads all minor leagues. I'd have to check, but that's a lot of doubles so far. 15 doubles, 6 home runs, 13 steals, 10% walk rate, and a 22.5% strikeout rate. But the problem is, even with Ketel Marte on the IL earlier this year, they brought up Tim Tawa, did not bring up Lawler, and he's still kind of blocked. Perdomo is, very, very, having a good season right now. So Suarez has been up and down, but still hitting a lot of tanks, and obviously Marte at second base. So no open spot for Lawler, but what have been your thoughts on Lawler, this year, Welsh? What do you think the long-term outlook is here, and when do you think we see him? It's maybe a hard answer to the question, though.
Yeah, I don't have a good answer for it. It's funny. I was just looking yesterday. The thing I've been wanting is just like, let's play him in the outfield a little bit. And they're playing him everywhere, but he's playing across the infield and he's blocked across the board. They love Eugenio's defense. His bats, comes in and out. Geraldo Perdomo is having an all-time season for him. And Ketel Marte is back, even though he's a little bit banged up and kind of DHing sometimes. So I don't know. Hazen said that when he was ready, they were going to bring him up. And they wouldn't worry about anything else. That doesn't seem, I don't, what more can you do than hit .360? Like, I don't know what else, 340, what can you do? Right. So I don't know when he'll be up. I don't think he's going to be a big, loud power guy anymore. I think it can steal some bases. I think we could see a Bryson Stott like fantasy season for him. If we get 15-30, that would be really slick, but I don't know where it's at right now. I think there's still a lot of optimism, but he's blocked. They don't seem to be finding a spot, and they're prioritizing Tim Tawa and Garrett Hampson in the outfield out there when it's like DFA Hampson, let Lawler play some outfield and let him be a super util guy. Let Lawler replace once or twice a week Ketel Marte at second and let him DH on the short side or whatever you want to do. And then let him play 1 or 2 days on the outfield and let's not do this Garrett Hampson stuff, but they do. And I don't know what the deal with it is, but I think that's kind of my fantasy take on it. I think he's matured. He's making more contact and we need to see it at the major league level to be like full, full buy-in.
I find it funny that, obviously I was a big Garrett Hampson guy and that was not a great call on my part back in the day, but it's funny how I got, those other guys, I forget who even was at this point, that were blocking Hampson from getting an opportunity with the Rockies several years ago. And now he's the one playing the block card on top prospect with the Diamondbacks now. But Hampson's bounced around like, 3 or 4 teams since then. It's kind of funny, but how things come full circle. I've always been a big Lawler guy, solid above average power. The contact skills have been all right. They've been 75% this year. Obviously he's a premium athlete, 30 plus steal guy, as you mentioned. So yeah, I wanted to see him get a shot. I still have him as a top 10 fantasy prospect right now. He's kind of back into my top 10. you know, back up there. He dropped down to like around 20, I think. I never dropped him down super low last year. You know, I haven't dropped him or DeLauder too much. You know, people have with DeLauder because of the injuries, but yeah, the talent's still there, still very high upside for both. So I kind of kept them higher than most in my rankings. And Lawler absolutely has bounced back this year. We're still waiting to see that with DeLauder, but yeah, Lawler, I'm still definitely super high on Lawler, in on Lawler, and would recommend buying right now. Just, yeah, I don't know when we see him. That's the tough thing.
Samesies.
Yep. All right, let's, I mean, there's so many. We could literally talk another hour because I love the D-back system offensively. Pitching is another story, but we won't get into the pitching, you know, prospects right now. But, you know, there's so many guys that are ranked pretty highly right now or trending up. You know, Dimitri Cresantes, Ryan Waldschmidt, Slade Caldwell is having a phenomenal season right now, as a 500 OBP. I think he had a rough game yesterday, like 0 for 4 with 4 Ks. But 500 OBP right now as an 18-year-old. You'd love to see that. You know, Tommy Troy bouncing back. You know, Lou James Groover, you know, the artist formerly known as Gino Groover, having a pretty solid season in AA as well. JD Dix, you know, who you see out in the complex level. So, I mean, I don't know. We can talk about all these guys. But let's start with Dix, though, a guy that you've seen out there so far this year. I mean, he's only been out there for, I think it's, what, 28 plate appearances or so. But what have been your early thoughts on Dix, who I think many like as a potential breakout this season?
Yeah, he's one of my favorites. Switch hitter, power from both sides, crazy good speed. I got some great video on my Twitter, at Is It The Welsh, you guys can check out. Strong guy. I also think body projection, you know, he could be a third baseman. I mean, I can kind of play all around, but I think he's super athletic, super fast, really strong bat, hard worker. He's one of my favorites in this organization. I've rocketed him up. I've got him above Tommy Troy, and I think maybe it's a big question, but I've got, you know, I think some have Dimitri Cresantes even higher. He's got great plate skills and stuff like that. I just think, yep, I think statistically JD Dix is going to be a louder tool. So I've got Dix, yeah, above Cresantes.
Yeah, Cresantes is like, you know, he's a plus hit tool guy, I think. The contact skills are there, the approach is there, but it's like, is he more than like a 15 homer guy? You know, I don't think, yeah, he's ever going to be a big, you know, he's not a speedster either. So it's like, is it one of those like higher average OBP types that has, you know, 10 to 15 home runs and steals, something like that, which is still valuable. You still can have some value with that. And I have Cresantes, I think, like around 120-ish in my prospect rankings right now. But yeah, more of the high floor, better in real life types than the super flashy, fun types for fantasy. But yeah, I think Dix could absolutely surpass. I still have Dix lower, but you know, I want to see from you, Welsh, end of the year, what, you know, give me a range. JD Dix will be a top blank prospect at the end of the season.
I'll say a top 75 prospect. If, okay, I want to go bold, I think a top 50. We still need to see him start to dominate, but you know, you're gonna have a decent amount of graduations, and I mean, there's a big crew of players he's gonna be fighting, but like, you know, pending where you rank, you know, Emil Morales or Braylon Payne and stuff like that, I think Dix can be in that territory. I think he's the highest upside guy. Like, you know, like you said, like we can kind of talk about the Diamondbacks forever, but I think, you know, Slade Caldwell and Ryan Waldschmidt, I think they're kind of gonna be the pinnacle of this. I think Caldwell's physical stature is going to come into question for a lot of people, but it's loud stats. Ryan Waldschmidt's bat is coming alive. I think Drew Jones is still kind of back defensively. His bat looks a little bit better. Cresantes might be maybe the best pure hit tool guy, but is it leading, yeah, to big stats? So I think we all know about those guys. When you're starting to look at like who are the potential risers, I think JD Dix is one of the biggest risers. I think Johnso Luis could kind of get back into it. I think, yeah, everybody remembers. I think it was Keith Law had him like insanely high. He's kind of bouncing back, 11 stolen bases, 264. And I also think on the pitching market, Daniel Egan is a pitcher that is going to be kind of rocketing up with the Diamondbacks. Huge strikeout numbers so far, a decent whip and high A. And I think those are the three upside prospects away from what I think is a strong core of, like, the Diamondbacks have five prospects inside the top 100. And then I think you're going to have like Johnso Luis, Egan, and Dix are going to be the ones that are going to push into it. And Tommy Troy is kind of the wild card of the whole group.
Yeah. I mean, he had a rough year last year, but, you know, good showing out in the Arizona Fall League last year. So yeah, I definitely like him to bounce back, and he already is. I mean, two home runs, six steals.
Yeah. I'm playing over 300.
Yeah, it's a lot of high OBPs right now. Can we just talk about like Lawler 411 OBP? Crisantes actually has like the out of like this bunch of people, the lower one at 371, which is still very good. Caldwell's 500 on the dot. Walsh was 468. Drew Jones 353. Tommy Troy 464. And even Lou James Groover 360. And he's got 7 home runs this year, hitting 291. 5.63 slug. You know, I like Groover a good bit too. Contact has always been there.
Yeah.
You know, there's you know, not huge pop, but you know, maybe a 20 homer bat long term. So I like Groover a good bit too. But yeah, there's so many Arizona guys, you know, that I love in the system. But you know, hit on Caldwell again real quick here. You know, obviously good start to the year. 315, 500, 517 slash, 8 doubles, 2 triples, 2 bombs, 7 steals, you know, walking a ton, 22.5% walk rate. But also, I think this led to a little bit of a higher K rate, 32%. You know, what are your thoughts on Caldwell long term? And kind of a similar question to Dix, how high do you see a guy like Slade Caldwell rising in prospect rankings this year?
I think he's gonna push that top 50 as well. I mean, he's in a continuous stealing bases. He's got incredible bat speed. I think in everything that people would like about a guy like in Jet Williams in the past, you can like about him, he just doesn't play in the infield. And Jet Williams is now a center fielder. I think you might look at and compare guys like Jet Williams and him in the long term, similar skill sets and just like physical stature. But yeah, I think both of those guys, legitimately Dix, Caldwell and Waldschmidt are going to push that top 50 to 75 range with how those bats are flying. You know, Drew Jones is just far off of it. He's an A plus defender. He's gonna be a better real life guy than fantasy. He's stealing bases again. He's hitting for some average, but there's no power. These other guys are all showing off like power numbers. They're also able to run, and they have strong batting averages, specifically Caldwell. So I think Caldwell is going to push the limits of that top 50 range.
Yeah, I'm definitely there with you. I have him in like the back at top 100 right now, but yeah, definitely think he could push up in that top 50 range. And he's a little bit, you know, Dix and Caldwell and all these guys, they're cheaper because there's a lot of hype on Payne right now. I've seen some that are like, want to put Payne top 25 already. So I don't like these, like, you know, the younger upside toolsy, you know, prospects right now, especially in the outfield. You know, I think you can get a Caldwell for a bit cheaper than you can get like a Braylon Payne right now. So
yeah,
definitely. I like this Arizona system a lot. So a lot of fun prospects here, but we'll cap it there. That was a really fun discussion. Welsh, as always, appreciate you joining me, my friend. Quick shout out to you guys over at Fantasy Pros. Do a great job there. And what do you guys got going on over at Fantasy Pros right now that you want to plug?
Oh, I mean, again, we've got Leading Off. It goes on YouTube after it's live Monday through Friday morning show. If you want to catch it live, twitch.tv/fantasypros, 12 p.m. Eastern every single day, Monday through Friday. We also do like a prospecting video on the YouTube. We do trades. We do waivers. We do a live stream on Wednesday. We got tons of baseball content on Fantasy Pros. I'm still doing Prospect One. I might have a 2 show for this week, one of just me and one of a local guest out here of a guy that's fantastic. So Prospect One, you guys can check out. And then In This League is always going down. Search those. And at the end of the day, just check out my Twitter at Is It The Welsh. Post the podcast and post in lots of prospect videos. I'm putting a more videos on my Instagram as well at Is It The Welsh. I'm doing a lot more videos that I'm not putting on Instagram there of just kind of, you know, pseudo prospects or like the co video. I don't know if I put on Twitter, but I put on Instagram. So you can check that out as well.
Nice. Yeah, absolutely. Highly recommend following everything the Walsh does. He's one of the best in the business for a reason. And there's a reason why we've had him on this show so many times. But that is going to wrap us up. Again, thanks to Chris Walsh for coming on at Is It The Walsh on Twitter. Me at Eric Cross MLB. Show is at Toolshed Pod. And I'll be back with you again next week with another great guest. But until then, everyone take care.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.